This recording, Texas 13, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Karma Gets a Cure is copyright Douglas N. Onaroff, Jill McCullough, and Barbara Somerville.
Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district of the territory. So she was very happy to start a new job at a superb private practice in North Square near the Duke Street Tower. That area was much nearer for her and more to her liking. Even so, on her first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising because normally you would only expect to see it in a dog or a goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling, "Karma, Karma," which Sarah thought was an odd choice for a name. Karma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her. But Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with her palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Karma and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Also, almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. "I can't imagine paying so much." But Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. When I was little, I was born in Huntsville, and we lived down the country, and we had this horse named Billy, and or you could really call him Old Faithful, because we were young. There's 7 of us, and at this time there's probably 5 of us born, and my brother and I, we're the oldest 2. And my dad would, you know, always be taking care of the kids, and he would just trust us to go out with his horse anytime. He knew that, I mean, horses can be dangerous, but he didn't think this horse was dangerous. So we could go out there. We'd stand up on the rabbit cage because, of course, we're too short to saddle it up. But if we stood on top of the rabbit cage, we'd call the horse over by it and he'd stand still and let us saddle him up. And my brother and I would ride him, like, every day. And after a while, we just, like, thought, hey, let's have some fun with this, let's play games. And so we just let the horse go, we just kick it, and he would just walk all around the whole pasture. And we just decided, okay, we're going to close our eyes. So we just kind of almost took a nap on the horse. We just closed our eyes, and he went all the way around the pasture and up and down the slopes and everywhere. And then whenever he knew he had covered it all, he came back and just stopped at the gate. And then we opened our eyes and we're like, okay, we're here. And then we got off, and it was so funny because I always remember that story. Because it was the only time that we actually did that where we closed our eyes, but he still did exactly what we would have done if we would have had our eyes open and been leading him. It's like he didn't even need to be led. He already knew where to go. So anyway, he was trained really well. And anyway, as far as my accent goes, people have always commented that I'm real country. And it's strange that people comment that you're real country when you're in the same town that you're from. You wouldn't think that people would say anything to you unless you go out of state or something like that, which I definitely get because we say y'all, and everywhere you go people want to know if I say y'all, and I'm like, no, we don't say y'all. And then when I leave, I'm like, okay, bye y'all, and they're like, ah, gotcha. Anyway, so I do say y'all a lot. But my family would comment on it too. They're like, you're real country. And everybody would mock me, either my family or school, anywhere. They would repeat things that I would say as soon as I would say it. And I'm like, I'm not country. And they're like, yes, you are. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And it would just get worse from there. So I just have to stop talking because it would get so twangy that I couldn't even listen to myself. And my brother used to get mad at me because he listens to alternative music. And I would know some of the words and I would kind of start singing. And he'd say, please stop because you're making it sound so country. And it's not a country song. And, you know, even a couple of years ago, he said it again. He's like, you make every song country. Just, you know, don't do it. It's amazing how you can speak right to my heart without saying a word. You light up the dark. Try as I may, I could never explain what I hear when you don't say a thing. And that one is country, but another one that's alternative sounds just as country. Despite all my rage, I'm still just a rat in a cage. for someone to say what is lost can never be saved. And that is a totally alternative song, you know, hardcore, heavy metal, and nothing country about it, but somehow I intend to make it country anyway.